Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. I am Ewan Spence, still calling myself the host, and we shall carry on calling them co-hosts and special guest stars as the rest of the team from All About Windows Phone join me to talk about the world of Windows Phone, what's been happening the last week, what we've been using, what we've been looking forward to, and having a little dig into some of the contentious points that have been raised over the last days, weeks, and months of Microsoft's mobile handsets. So, still calling himself a co-host, I believe, we have Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, still calling himself a co-host, we have David Gilson.
Hi, hello, everyone, and I'll be a cohort today.
A cohort? That makes it sound like we have evil plans. How can you have evil plans and Microsoft in the same sentence, David?
I'll leave that to everyone's imagination.
Ah, not that we want to infer anything. Steve, do you still want to be the Dr. Smith special guest star?
No, I'm going to be an interested onlooker.
An interested onlooker. Ladies and gentlemen, Boris Johnson. No, Steve Litchfield. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Hello, David. Hello, Rafe. Have we all had a good week, Rafe?
Yes, we have. I've had a busy week, more content on the way, more site features being enabled in the background, and I was off to the Nokia Lumia kind of launch party tonight in London, where Deadmau5 is playing some dance music and lighting up the Milbank Tower at the same time. So I'll be able to talk about that on next week's podcast, although when you're listening to this, it will have already happened and we'll probably have a video on the site to show it off.
So the band is called Deadmau5?
No, I think the DJ is called Deadmau5. Or it's actually spelt Deadmau5, but I understand it's pronounced Deadmau5, and there's going to be a sort of audio-visual spectacular on the Milbank Tower, which UK listeners will know as the home of the Conservative Party and the birthplace of New Labour. And I think Nokia are hoping some of that newness rubs off on them. It's kind of the launch party or big event to try and attract a bit of attention to Nokia's marketing campaign around their new Windows Phone device.
And basically, Rafe is the only one who's young enough and cool enough on the team to actually go to a DJ-centric event.
Yes, indeed. And David is busy thinking at Milbank Tower. Isn't that where Ubuntu are based, a UK developers team? The answer to that, David, is yes. Yes. I don't know a Linux thing that David doesn't know. Wow. Right, so let's get on with that. We're going to talk about the UI in Metro later on in the show and also pick out our favorite applications we've been using or going to use for the next week. But now, a couple of the news points. Rafe, as you said, we've been building up stuff on the website. And after last week's podcast, we kind of pulled together some statistics. Tell us a bit about the most expensive applications for Windows Phone.
Well, this is a job I actually put Ewan onto, but I'll summarise the story here. We thought it'd be interesting to look at what some of the most expensive applications in the marketplace were. So we got out our tool that looks at all of this kind of thing, makes it very easy to sort through the data, and had to look at sort of the top five applications. And actually, truth be known, it's an edited top five, so it kind of make a few interesting points. I think at number five in the list with a medical application, which actually was probably the top one that was justified in its pricing because it's licensing some medical textbooks effectively on the phone. And then there was one that was a getting things done system that was a bit more expensive at £123. Then it went to slightly, if I can use the word, dodgier applications. In this case, it was Date Square for Elite, which was a dating application premised on the fact you would pay £365 for it, so you'd get the right sort of person on the dating site. But I can't imagine there'd be that many profiles at that cost. It got even more ridiculous after that, the kind of €500 note application, which let you show a €500 note on the back and the front. And yes, it cost €500 essentially, or £364.99. And then it got to the even more tragic I Am Rich application. Actually, this was one that was first appeared on iPhone, so it's a weak copy of a really crappy application, and this just displays I'm Rich on the phone screen, and again costs $500 or £364. So it just goes to show there is a lot of applications that are of dubious value amongst the 41,000 that are available in the Windows Phone marketplace. But we were trying to make a serious point in this, in that, you know, the value of applications is sometimes a bit ridiculous, but there are sometimes reasons why you might want to charge a lot of money. The medical application is kind of the example of that. But we're also looking at sort of showing off some of the statistics that, you know, maybe don't get as much attention as they deserve in the marketplace. Actually, if you look at the overall cost in the marketplace, the vast majority of applications come in at under £2 and actually most of those are at the 79p mark, which is the $1 mark. But there are 894 applications. That's about 2%. Price over £7.90. Some of those are GPS navigation. The remainder tend to be books and things like that. But we will be doing some more stories, some more articles on pricing. But just a little bit of insight there for you. And if you've got anything you think we should be looking at, let us know.
One question for you, Rafe. Can I have the All About Windows Phone credit card back now?
Yes, I think so. I was a bit reluctant for Ewan to have the card while he was looking at $500 applications, just in case he made a mistake. I should have probably said that of those five applications I mentioned, only one of them had a trial version and the rest you had to buy outright. And quite frankly, if anyone has bought them, they probably need their phone taken away from them and sending off to the loony bin. With that, with maybe the exception of the medical application, which, as I say, I think probably has justified that price. It's really the cost of licensing the textbooks, not the application itself.
So let's stay with money things. For our American listeners, they have just had Thanksgiving Day, where everybody sits down and is thankful for what they have and what they're able to offer. And then they have Black Friday, in which they spend no money at all in a huge orgy of consumerism, trying to buy everything they don't already have that advertising says they do. Black Friday is and it's almost the American starting gun on the festive season, traditionally known for great big special offers and discounts. Of course, it's all about turnover rather than profit. For those of you who are doing business, turnover is just as vital, and you'll know why. But what interested me on this was the amount of American buzz and amazement that Amazon and Microsoft stores were offering Windows Phone for a penny plus monthly contract, or for free on a monthly contract. And it's like, well, we've had that for years over here in the UK. Steve, I know that you keep an eye on these sort of things for over the whole thing, to not just Windows Phone, but for Symbian, Android, and iOS as well. It's such a huge disconnect. I'm like, well, yeah, because they want you to pay for the monthly contract. It seems like they've forgotten that bit in this rush of free.
It's absolutely crazy, really. Looking at it from the outside, I think, how is it that people don't realize they're being conned? And conned is perhaps slightly too strong a word, but effectively, I mean, you used to say you buy a what should be a $400, $500 smartphone for a penny, or an American penny, and then, yes, you pay $80 a month for 18 months or 2 years. And if you add that lot up, the actual upfront costs are really quite trivial. And it really winds me up, actually, listening to American podcasts. They say, well, the device X is coming in at $199 and device Y is coming in at $149. That's a $50 difference. And they go on about the relative prices and in the marketplace. Like, no, you've completely missed the point. The overall cost of each of those two, because you have to buy them with a contract, is $1,600. And an extra $50 makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. So you've got me started on a rant, Ewan, but I'll let Rafe chip in now.
Yeah, I would just say this is really about perception. You know, people see the upfront cost and they don't think about the contract. And for some of our European listeners, it's probably worth explaining that if you get a smartphone in the States, you don't have a lot of choice in the contract that you then get with it in terms of the cost of it. You're pretty much stuck on a $70 or $80 contract. There are exceptions to this, but for our US listeners, if you're in Europe, it's much more common to see SIM-only contracts where you pay significantly less on a contract price. And in the UK, that starts around £15. 20 euros is not uncommon in the rest of Europe either. And with that, you're just paying month to month. You don't get any subsidy on a handset purchase. But of course, that's a dramatic saving compared to the US pricing. And contract prices in the Europe and UK also vary. You know, they start maybe down at the £15 mark, but you'll get very little subsidy with that. If you want a decent subsidy on your handset, you're probably going to have to pay at least £30, sort of $50, 50 euros. And at that point, you might start getting the handset for free at the top end. We've said before the Lumia 800, for example, is available free on the £25 or sort of $35, 35 euro contracts. And that's pretty competitively priced. Usually it's a little bit more than that. But the difference is you can actually buy a phone SIM free and then go on one of these SIM only contracts and, relatively speaking, save the money that you might otherwise be paying in a subsidy. Because, of course, when there's something like a £20 difference over the course of a 2-year contract, that sort of £480, which is basically the cost of buying the device. And of course, you have a certain amount of flexibility within a SIM-only contract. You don't have to pay off the rest of the contract. You can switch away and all that kind of thing. So this is sometimes where I think some of the, some of us will sort of look at in a slight amazement at the US market, where things seem to be a lot more restricted by the operators. And I do appreciate there are exceptions to this, but that's a sort of general pattern of how the market is.
And it also seems crazy that the fortunes of the phone are decided by that initial price. And that initial price, certainly in America, is determined by the negotiations between the handset manufacturer and the carriers. You know, if AT&T decided to put the Lumia at $0 and $80 a month, or $200 and $80 a month, then, you know, everybody will go, oh, the Lumia's overpriced at $200, even though it's actually, you know, it's almost like Gilligan's Island. It's like you can't see the land. You know it's there, but it's just wrong.
That's right. But as I say, this is about the perception. And, I mean, if you look at the total cost of ownership, often in the States, the difference between those prices at the beginning is really what makes a difference to the total cost of ownership, because the contracts are very broadly the same, whatever handset you end up getting, which is why I think more attention is paid to that initial price point. But I would expect more and more handsets in the States to sort of become available for free. And we've seen that happen with something like the iPhone. I mean, admittedly, it's one of the older generation, and it happens with some of the Android devices. I'd not be at all surprised to see Nokia sort of do the necessary to get the Lumia when it launches in the States, and I assume it will be maybe a slightly different model because of the 3G bands and things like that, at the $99 or even the free price point, because they'll be wanting to push it very hard. But it does make an important point about the US market, is that the operators, the carriers, have an enormous amount of influence, far more so than in the rest of the world, really. And the interesting thing that Nokia said, and Microsoft as well with Windows Phone, is they want to be as carrier and operator friendly as possible. And that's one of the things that they're kind of offering over iOS, where obviously it tends to be more Apple dominated, and even to an extent Android as well. I think probably Android maybe sits somewhere in the middle. We haven't really seen that have much of an impact yet, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if in 2012 that attitude of being more friendly to the operators is something both Microsoft and Nokia use as a stick and as a sort of carrot to operators to get them to range the handsets. And quite how well that can work out really remains to be seen. And obviously they're talking about it at the moment. The evidence of how much they're actually doing to that end is perhaps less in evidence. But there is the kind of the idea of operator tiles, potentially operator applications, and a lot more to come, I understand. So it's worth keeping an eye on, because this is a battle that is far from over.
You should have kept this as our discussion piece in the middle of the show. But there we go. We'll have something else. Right. Swing over this one here. It's all about getting people in the door, really, isn't it? MSDN in the UK. Finally, a special offer for people in the UK to do something. Developers who register with the new MSDN gifts program can earn points up to the end of January. Every time you release a unique application into the Windows Marketplace, and it's accepted by Microsoft as being unique, which means you can't just do 57 book readers, you get a point. Collect 4 points, and there's a pool of about 15,000 of them. You get a free Xbox, or a cinema projector, or a flat screen TV. I mean, David, I want to come with you on this one, because you know, you're going to look at this and go, that's Microsoft either promoting their toolkit, doing almost a bribe, dare I say it, but in any case, it does really help to get people into that marketplace, to boost the visibility, to boost the idea that you should be developing for Windows Phone, doesn't it, David?
I think it certainly attracts people, because the Xbox, Xbox and actually Nintendo Wii have almost become a common currency in promotional offers. I mean, if you look at other mobile phone companies trying to get you to go on their network, for example, there is a certain normality of giving away a games console. And of course, Microsoft are going to give away their own games console. So in that sense, it doesn't seem to ring my alarm bells quite so much. And yes, it really does show how serious they are about this. The only thing is, there's a lot of people who may already have Xboxes, so expect to see a lot of cheap Xboxes on eBay soon.
advantage there, of course, is that you can actually choose from the prize pool. So if you've already got the Xbox, then you can switch your 4 points to a pocket cinema projector. And if you only get 1 point, there's mini DAB radios and magazine subscriptions coming up as well. I just love the fact that this is bolstering the idea that it's a serious thing to consider. And I know a lot of the London PR houses are basically asking for Windows Phone applications, not because of raw numbers, not because of any sort of market penetration, because the perception is that's what they should be doing, right?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about this, it's probably attracting a very certain type of developer. I think it's maybe the one-man band hobbyist developer who's, you know, checking out the SDK and maybe just need that little extra bit of motivation to push them to release a few applications. Because I was speaking to a number of people who said, yeah, I've played about with it. I'm probably going to release something, but so this will just be the extra push. And I think it's an interesting way of appealing to that kind of developer. And talking of appealing to developers, I actually went to an event called alphalabs.cc. It's actually part of the 1.0 digital festival that runs at the British Film Institute in the South Bank in London. And this was kind of it was actually a Nokia promotion with conjunction from Microsoft as well, to kind of appeal to what I would call another set of developers. And it's outside the kind of the traditional developer engagement envelope, you know, and we know that lots of devices are now given away to developers to encourage them to develop applications. But traditionally, that's done through existing mailing lists or they hold a specific developer event. 1.0 is kind of, as I say, a digital festival that's been running for 15 years that sees a combination of sort of code and art come together to create. It can be an installation, it can be a film, it can be an audio experience, all kinds of kind of in a very broad sense, digital art, but it can encompass quite a few different things. And this alphalabs.cc, that's the website address where you can go and find out some more, was basically inviting a bunch of creatives and coders in, encouraging them to work together to create interesting applications. There wasn't a particular commercial drive behind this. It was very much about sort of interesting ways that developers and artists might work together to create, you know, something a little bit different in the digital space. And to sort of give an example of what they were doing, Nokia and Microsoft had invited three teams to kind of work on something before the event. And there was a very impressive one that was kind of mixing music together. It had eight Lumia 800s, and you could tap on them to control the beat of one track, and then for the drums, and then something else for the next track, and then a different percussion instrument, and so on, to build up this whole track and control the playback, remixing something that had already been created. And then there was an XNA kind of a digital audio visual thing going on at the same time. All quite impressed from a technical point of view. The second one was perhaps more immediately appreciated where it might go, which was a 3D game that was based around the audio visual of a music soundtrack that had been released. And it was actually a racing game that looked really, really very impressive. But the inspiration of it had come from music. And the third one was actually a kaleidoscope application that was using fractals and then using all the sensors of the phone, microphone, camera, compass, accelerometer, etc., to control what the was being shown through the kaleidoscope. And you could take pictures of what was then put them in a gallery, upload them to the internet, all that kind of thing. So, you know, it was really interesting from my point of view to see this complete departure from the traditional developer event. And I think it's exactly what Microsoft and Nokia need to do, because they're not going to sort of break new ground by just copying the other developer events that happen out there. They're kind of a necessary thing to do as well. It's, if you like, the basic hygiene of developer engagement. But to stand out from the crowd, make a bit of noise about something different, this was a very interesting idea. We're going to be reporting on it in the site once we get some creatives back from it, and once we have some more information. We're also going to follow Alpha Labs as people release stuff, and they gave away a couple of hundred devices at this event, so it'll be really interesting to see what's produced out of it. But it's all part of this giving away sort of 25,000 Nokia devices to developers to kind of encourage and boost the ecosystem. And we'll be, you know, it's hard to judge what kind of impact that has, because some people will just take a device and go away and not do anything with it. But I think the kind of seriousness with which Microsoft and Nokia are applying themselves here and the volume at which they're doing it will almost certainly have a noticeable impact. And I look forward to sort of being able to talk about that in future podcasts.
Indeed. Of course, the next goal is 50,000 applications in the marketplace. And when that happens, we will bring you that. So keep an eye on the front page and the RSS feeds. One brief bit that I'm just going to mention. Nokia have acknowledged that there are some of the Lumia 800s do have an issue with the battery. There's going to be two software updates. There's going to be some changes rolling up into the upcoming 774 update. And there will be another update near the end of December or the start of January, which should address the problems that some people are experiencing. That's acknowledged. We have details of that back on the website. Right, I want to have a quick chat about Metro UI now in our central bit of the show. David, I want to come to you first, because for those people who are new to the All Abouts and the Insights, All About Symbian Insight has been picking up some discussion on Windows Phone over the summer while we were waiting for the new site to come up. And I seem to remember at the time that you really didn't like Metro and all the big fonts and all the words being cut off and everything. Now you've used it in anger, David. Metro UI, far too simple, missing too many tricks, or Microsoft might actually have something here. Discuss.
Okay, well, the examples that you just quoted me on, I still stand by. I do think some of the oversized fonts are unhelpful, and I have anecdotes to back that up, but I won't go into that just now. The live tiles, philosophically, I do like those. Now, just let me digress for a moment just to explain where I'm coming from. Before we had Windows Phone and Metro UI, we had Symbian, Android, and the iPhone. And I always said that the iPhone was actually functionally deficient compared to Symbian and Android because, before everyone at home jumps on me, the iPhone has an app grid and nothing else. Whereas Symbian and Android have an app grid, which Symbian can organize as well in any Byzantine folder structure you care to create, plus home screens with widgets that can present you information about what's going on in your device and what's going on in your life, and that you can place them in any combination you like. And Android was even a bit more flexible because it could have any size widgets you want. Now, just going back to the fundamentals, what I think a smartphone home screen should do is present you quick, glanceable information, and yes, I'm kind of channeling Marco Attestari here, about what's going on in the device and what's going on in your life. Now, why I like the live tiles is because they do exactly the same thing, just in a different way. Now, the difference is that with Symbian and more Android than Symbian, but you can spend ages tweaking, and that's why people like Android. It's a tinkerer's device. You can spend ages getting it just how you want it. But if you ever have to wipe your device or you upgrade to a new phone, you have to do all that again, and you have to remember everything. So it's just, you get to, I mean, even with Symbian, you can file everything into folders and have your applications organized how you like. But then if you have to reset your phone, you have to do it all again. There's no way to save that and just like say, okay, restore it how it was. You can't do that. So it's just, you get to a point where you can't face doing it again. And with Metro UI, there's just these tiles, and all you've got to do is just drag these tiles across. And yes, people have said that the live tile system is restrictive because it's just a grid of squares. Well, yeah, it is. But that means it's quicker to get set up how you want it to be. So that's why that aspect of Metro UI gets a thumbs up from me.
Steve, same question to you. I mean, you as a huge amount of knowledge going through almost every single UI, though I don't think you ever had a Newton. Where does Metro rank in the pantheon of interfaces on small screen devices?
Extremely high. I've said for a while that I've been impressed not just by the freshness of Windows Phone's interface, but the complete fresh approach to how information is linked. I mean, if you phrase the question, is Windows Phone in its current state good enough for you, Steve? I would actually say no. And if you say, are there some huge stonking gaps where Microsoft, Nokia, and the other licensees need to fill, I'd say yes. But the underlying UI, the Metro, which I guess has been around for 2 or 3 years now, and the Zune music players, is absolutely brilliant at what it does, and that is linking information. Under a traditional user interface, you go into an application, you look at some data, then you drill down through some menus to find out some more information about that data, and it's very much going up and down a hierarchical tree. With Windows Phone and Metro UI, information on the whole comes up on screen, and then yes, this kind of the font clue off to the side of the screen shows you there's more there, and you can really can look at different pivots, like a pivot table in a spreadsheet. You can get different views of the same information, related information to that information, and it all just flows seamlessly and is presented just at the time you need it. So from me, a big thumbs up for the overall UI. I just need more commitment at the underlying functions from me.
Right, if you can make this 3 from 3, or are you going to throw a spanner in the works?
No, I would sort of back up what Steve said in that I think the intelligence of the underlying framework in terms of the design pattern is what's most interesting about Metro and its biggest asset. There is clearly room for a little bit more extension, and I think we saw the first phase of that with Mango. And I will say, I think Windows Phone went from being a device that I couldn't really use from day to day pre-Mango to one that I was quite happy to. And there were a number of functional changes that caused that, mainly around live tiles, multitasking, other bits and pieces. And there was a performance boost too. But what impressed me most was how seamlessly those enhancements of functionality happened. They actually sat very well in the existing UI framework, and in one sense, that's the thing that impressed me most about Mango, because traditionally, when you've seen that happen on other platforms, it often feels like something has been bolted on. And you know, to bring up an example, notifications, I think, is probably the classic example of this on all the other platforms. You know, Symbian has recently introduced a new drop-down with Bell. And yes, it looks nice and feels nice, but it does feel like an add-on. And I'd say the same about iOS and the same about Android. Android did have it built in from earlier on, but it does still feel like a separate sort of tick box of functionality. And actually, notifications, I think, is one of the areas where Windows Phone is perhaps a bit weak, and Steve was referring to more work needed as a possible area there. The way they happen on screen is fine, either toast, that's kind of the line along the bottom, or on live tile, but there's no central place to go and see all the things you missed, and maybe there's notification central or something needed there. And that's an example of how there is more work to come, and no doubt in subsequent releases we're going to see a refinement of some of the techniques used. But the other example I would kind of bring out was, Mango and Windows Phone gets criticized, I think, for almost being too simple and very rigid in the way it does things. And David referred to this and saying it's great because it's easy to use. But I would say it's also about being very consistent across different experiences. And so that does make it quite intuitive and easy to pick up and use. But I would also say people need to be wary of saying, it's constrained, it's too simple, because there is a certain amount of complexity that is hidden. And I didn't really begin to appreciate this until I'd been using the device for a while. There's a couple of examples of this. A good one is groups functionality in contacts, which isn't set up by default. There is kind of a family group kind of sitting there blank to give you a hint. But once you use this, you can actually set up different groups of people, and you have them as a live tile optionally on the home screen. You can then see just updates from them in terms of social networks or a way to quickly dial them. So I've got one for family, which means I can then get at my family updates very quickly and also dial them very quickly. So it's that degree of customization is actually much higher than you might expect. And kind of the reverse side of that, or another side of that, is the live tiles you get in applications are often deep linked into specific functionality. So for example, Shazam has an upcoming update that will allow you to have a kind of a secondary live tile that links straight to that music recognition screen. So rather than having to open up the application, tap over to music recognition bit of the application, it'll jump you straight in and you can immediately start recognizing a song. And now there are quite a few applications that do this. You know, Nokia Maps allows you to pin a location to the home screen, so you can jump straight to that location. So I found when I've been going off to an event, I've pinned the location before I get there, and then when I get off the tube and I need to orientate myself to get to that location, I just tap it straight on the home screen and jump into it straight away. So that degree of customization is actually more apparent for what I'd call application level functionality. And it goes back to what I've said time and time again. It's not traditional application silos. It's the task based and experiences that you jump into. Talking about customization, it doesn't have the same degree as Android or Symbian, in terms of themes or wallpapers. And I think that's maybe something I'd like to see come in the future. but I actually feel that that kind of, if you like, experience customization, so you can have a start screen that is very much tailored to the kind of experiences you use daily on a phone rather than just around specific applications, is really very strong indeed. And you have to actually take advantage of those to really appreciate them. And it does come back to what has been said many times about Windows Phone, is that you really need to use the device for a little while to fully appreciate. And it is, of course, the big challenge that Microsoft, Nokia and the other manufacturers have, trying to persuade people to use it at least once.
I think I'll just chip in very quickly because I know we're short of time. What Riff was just saying about putting, say, like a destination quickly as a live tile. I think that restriction in the live tiles is actually its strength, because as I was saying before, it's easier to set up. And it means it becomes a very transient home screen, so that you can actually put the things you need at the time just up there quickly, like a beer, boarding pass, or a destination in maps, and just get on with doing it and then throw it away when you finish. I would just say, it's relevant to what we've been talking about, there's two little tweaks I would like to see on Metro UI. Well, specifically on the live tiles. We were talking about Toast pop-ups where the tiles cycle through information. I think that there is the risk of them being too fast so you can't read what they're telling you, but I think they do need to be faster, because I think a lot of the point of the live tiles notifications is that it's quick, glanceable information. But I find that the ones that do cycle through, I'm sat there waiting for it to cycle through and to see what it says next. For example, the me tile, and I want to see how many people have tweeted at me while I'm sat there waiting for it for ages. And the other thing is that I'm reviewing the 7 Pro, which is has a slide-up QWERTY keyboard. So on a desk, if I just put that down on the desk with the screen up, all my live tiles are sideways. Now, I'm okay with scrolling horizontally instead of vertically, but I think it'd be a great idea if they actually built in for the tiles, each individual tile to rotate 90 degrees to align with the vertical.
Yeah, I'd sort of say, in general, one of the weak points of Windows Phone is poor landscape support, and I'm pretty sure that's something that's going to be improved in the future, and that is very noticeable on the home screen with those keyboard devices. It's the same on the Dell Venue Pro.
So there we go then, strong views on Metro UI around. Just for those of you who are wanting for completeness, I guess it's 4 for 4 for me. Interestingly, I think Metro UI on Windows Phone has actually went back a little bit from the Zune HD Media Player, which also drove the Metro UI. It's evolved, and it's evolved to be much more accessible and much more suitable for the general population. There's a lot more swinging in graphics and moving on the Zune HDs, I'm used to it now on Windows Phone. So there we go. Very quickly, so we can keep under the time schedules, applications of the week. What have we been using? What are we all looking forward to using? David?
Oh, come on.
You don't have a theme tune, have you? No.
Oh. No.
Homework. Come on, jump to it. Implied homework. Anyway, Steve, you're sounding jumpy. Come on, then. What have you got for us this week?
Well, I'm just going to play this shot. Hang on, let's see if this works. Oh, you probably can't hear that. I'm just potting a yellow in international snooker. Yes, this is something I reviewed about a month ago when we launched All About WindowsPhone.com, but I don't think anyone was actually paying attention to the site then, so I'm going to play it now. International Snooker, which is a stonkingly good game. It's a full simulation of snooker as it sounds, but it's also the best one I've ever played. It's really, really responsive, looks absolutely gorgeous on the screen. You can direct the aim of your ball according to how you swipe on the screen, and the vertical offset on the screen depends on how fast the pans around the table work. So with a bit of practice, you can move around like you would on a real table. And this is the acid test of any good simulation game, is can you apply the same skills that you have in real life to the game, and do the balls react in the same way? And whether it's pool or snooker or another a tabletop game. And here the answer is yes, you can apply in an analog form different amounts of backspin, side spin, top spin. You can vary the strength of your shot, and the balls react just as they would in real life. And my average break in the international snooker is about the same as my average break in real life. It really feels like I'm playing the real thing, and there is nothing to put me off to think, oh, that's a game. It's not real. It's not as good as the real thing. So really big thumbs up for international snooker. I cannot believe it's only £2.29. If people balk at that price, then they're absolutely bonkers, because you can get 20, 30, 100 hours of gameplay out of this very easily.
And did you say balk deliberately in that last sentence?
Yes.
Yeah, of course you did. David, what have you been using this week?
Seismic. This is one of the many third-party Twitter and Facebook clients. It's been available on Windows Phone since as long as I've been looking at Windows Phone devices. Very good, because now in Manga, it actually supports live tiles for all the different views. For example, say if you want to know how many at replies you've got or how many direct messages you've got, you can actually put a live tile for just that type of tweet or Facebook message, and you'll get a counter on your screen. The only problem with it at the moment is that once you've actually looked at those messages, the counter doesn't reset. So I think that's something they need to fix. However, I do strongly recommend Seismic, and I will be doing an in-depth review of it at some point for allaboutwindowsphone.com, because with the people hub that's built into Windows Phone, it's a great idea, and I want it to do everything for me, because I think it, once you realize, oh, well, it doesn't do such and such, well, then there's no point having it. So until the People Hub does everything I need it to do, Seismic really nicely fills all the gaps, especially if you do use Twitter direct messages a lot or a lot of Facebook messaging. You can just put that live tile on and you'll get a notification. So that's Seismic, and you can find it in the Windows Phone Marketplace.
Also worth pointing out, Seismic works on multiple accounts, so you can have your at replies from AA_WP and Ewan both sitting on your live tiles as well, David, can't you?
That's right, yeah. And there's even a Salesforce CRM integration as well if you're doing any corporate malarkey.
That's because Seismic have done Loic's on his fourth pivot now of the Seismic name, and they're doing Salesforce stuff. But that's for another podcast, probably done out of America with a bundle of twits. Rafe, what have you got for this week?
I thought I would actually choose an application, given that Steve's done a game. I was originally going to do a game as well, but I'm going to mention something called Zmote, which is available in the marketplace for $1.49. It came out in September, but it's recently got an update to version 1.1, which adds support for multitasking, fast resume, which actually makes it a lot more functional. And what this does is act as a remote control for Zoom on your PC, and it works over a Wi-Fi network, so it can sort of work anywhere in the house, really. And this is really the idea. If you start using Zoom for connecting your smartphone to your PC, you might start using it to manage your music collection, or if you've got a Zoom HD, one of not very many people, I guess, you might already be storing all your music on Zoom. And you can basically use it as a remote control, but it's rather a sort of souped up remote control. I mean, yes, of course, it does play and pause of music and turning off shuffle and stuff like that and changing volume. But it also has a pretty good way of kind of finding music, having the screen on your phone and then finding what you want to play back. You know, there's various custom searches, and obviously it integrates things like album art very nicely indeed. And so it acts as a sort of a really nice remote control. And sometimes, I mean, I know when I'm sitting working at a computer and I've got some music playing in the background, it's sometimes easier just to pick up a remote control device and play that, you know, use the controls on that rather than going onto the PC application itself, especially if you're doing something else. So I thought this was quite an interesting one. As far as I'm aware, it's the first remote control application on Windows Phone for Zoom, and offers sort of a control of something outside the actual smartphone itself. So thumbs up from me.
There we go. Finally, I'd like to recommend Stopwatch. Now, there's a bundle of Stopwatch applications in the marketplace, specifically the one by Jose Arriaga. It's really, really basic, which is what I was looking for. I wanted a big clock where it should have a start button, and I could see the time going by. There's lapse if I needed it, and a stop button. And it's really useful for timing how long a podcast is going on for. So if I look at it now, guys, it's been a great week on All About Windows Phone, hasn't it?
It has indeed.
Hopefully we'll have more great weeks as we go along. Do keep following the site. The links to the recommended applications will be up on the website, allaboutwindowsphone.com. You can keep in touch with everything through the RSS, Twitter feeds, Facebooks, and all of that as well. Only remains for me to say goodbye to my co-host, Rafe Blanford.
Goodbye, everybody.
My cohort, David Gilson.
Goodbye, everybody.
The person who would most like to appear in an Irwin Allen serial for the pilot episode, Steve Litchfield.
Your cultural references completely escape me, as usual. Goodbye.
Yeah, you still managed to sneak in a bulk reference with the snooker game. I mean, come on. I'm Ian Spencer. I'm heading off to Armenia now, of all places, where the temperature will reach a high of minus 14 degrees Celsius. Let's see if the phone still works in that temperature. But for now, thank you all very much for listening. Catch you here next week for the words on the site and the audio and the video. except we don't do video. Not yet. I'll go now. Ta-ra.